Funding for On Point provided by Liberty Mutual Insurance for auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Last November, voters in Colorado and Washington State made landmark decisions. Marijuana in their states, they voted, would not just be for medical use, for cutting the pain of chemo or treating glaucoma. It would be, they voted, clear and legal for recreational use. First states the nation to make that choice. Last week, the federal government weighed in. Despite federal law, said the Department of Justice, go ahead. It's your state. It's not a priority for us. But here are the rules. This hour on Point, Colorado and Washington get a federal green light on recreational pot use and sale. So what now? You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you ready with the Rocky Mountain High jokes? How do you see this playing out? We're at 1-800-423-8255. All the way back in February, after the votes, President Obama was talking with Barbara Walters. Here's what he had to say about Washington and Colorado's recreational marijuana laws not being a top priority, said the president, for the federal government.
The federal government has a lot to do when it comes to criminal prosecutions. It does not make sense from a prioritization point of view for us to focus on recreational drug users in a state that has already said that under state law that's legal.
Last week, the Department of Justice made its guidelines very clear and the green light very clear. Here last Thursday, the day it all came out, was Washington's governor, Jay Inslee, saying he was pleased with the DOJ decision to allow Washington State's and Colorado's recreational marijuana laws to move forward.
I think that this is a very carefully calibrated and very common sense approach by the federal government to really respect something that has been successful for many years in our country, which is to allow states to be the laboratories of democracy. And this very carefully considered approach by the federal government will allow our state to move forward and show the country a way a well-regulated system can be effectuated in a state.
So how is this all going to work, and how does this play out in these states and nationally? We're going to dive in today. With us first today from Denver, Mile High City, jokes insert here, is John Ingold, reporter for the Denver Post. John, welcome. Thank you very much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Tom.
Remind us what a big deal this vote was and by what it passed.
Well, so it's obviously significant. It's, along with Washington, it's the first time any state in the country has authorized not only marijuana legalization, but also retail stores for recreational marijuana. Both states will allow that. So it's kind of seen as a model of initiatives that might be pushed in other states in 2016. Here in Colorado, it passed surprisingly easily. It had 55% of the vote. It actually received more votes than President Obama did in the state when he won Colorado.
And a huge turnout for that vote.
Yes. Obviously,
it's something like 80% turnout. If I read that correctly,
it was significant. Colorado was obviously important in the presidential race, and so in some ways, mm-hmm. The marijuana campaign rode the coattails of the get out the votes efforts of the presidential campaigns.
So we're going to learn a lot about this in this hour. We're going to look at the Department of Justice ruling, if that's the right guidance, if that's the right word here. But where are, and we'll hear about Washington State, but where is Colorado in the process of rolling this out? What happens when?
Sure. So currently the State Department of Revenue is working on the final rules for the recreational marijuana industry. Individual possession up to an ounce by people over 21 is already legal. Use is legal for people over 21. So it's really the stores that are kind of taking this phased-in approach to being rolled out. So those rules are going to come out pretty soon here, and then beginning in October, people who are owners of existing medical marijuana dispensaries will be able to start applying for licenses to open recreational marijuana stores, and they could do that as early as the first of the year.
And what are people anticipating that's going to look like? Will they be, you know, every street corner, like a corner convenience store? Will there be big signs, you know, for, I don't know, the latest pot in from I don't know where?
So the rules that we have right now say that for I think it's probably about a 9-month period, the only businesses that can apply to open a recreational store are existing medical marijuana dispensaries. So it sort of puts a cap on the size of the industry, at least initially. So you wouldn't be seeing them every street corner because, you know, we don't have medical marijuana dispensaries every street corner.
Okay.
In terms of signs, there's actually some advertising restrictions that are probably going to appear in the final rules that would prevent advertising in places where kids could see it. So billboards, TV ads, radio ads, even like I think ads in newspapers such as mine would end up being banned.
But the stores will be there, not just for medical marijuana, walk in any time, buy up to an ounce, and off you go. If you're Colorado, do you have to be a Colorado resident or anybody in Colorado?
It would be anybody in Colorado. For people who can't produce a Colorado ID, there's going to be some caps on how much you could buy. I think it's a quarter ounce at any one time.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea there is to try to prevent people from, you know, coming in from out of state and accumulating a lot in a short time and then taking it back out of state, which is one of the concerns the federal government has about marijuana legalization and the recreational industry.
So let's look at that. The Department of Justice finally comes out last week. Colorado and Washington State, not sure, not clear until last week what the reaction would be from the feds, because, of course, this is technically, it is illegal under federal law, but they're
right.
Sort of bowing to state precedents here. And what do they say?
Right. Well, so it actually remains illegal under federal law.
Yeah.
The guidance that came out last week doesn't change federal law. It's sort of it's kind of a memo to prosecutors,
mm-hmm.
And it went out to prosecutors, federal prosecutors in all 50 states. So it applies not just to Colorado and Washington, but also to states that have medical marijuana industries or states that might even be considering having those industries. Basically, the government says that we have these eight priority areas, and if you can operate a system that doesn't conflict with those, you know, we're going to let you go and see what happens.
You want to start to run us through their priorities? They're saying prosecuting recreational use is not a priority for them, sort of a green light there. But what are they concerned about? What guidelines or sort of bumper rails do they want to keep on here?
Sure. And a lot of what the memo talks about is actually speaks to the industry part of it, which was kind of the surprising part of the memo. Obviously, the president had previously said that users weren't going to be a priority. But when you start getting into people who run commercial operations, that's kind of a whole other area. So the memo articulates eight areas. There are things like, you know, preventing marijuana from going to kids, preventing...
Yep. Kids as in under 21 in this definition.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. They use the term minors, but it would be under 21 in Colorado.
Okay.
So preventing cartels or criminal gangs from being involved in the industry, preventing violence or, you know, illegal weapons being associated with the industry, keeping marijuana from flowing into states where it's still illegal. There's prevention of drug driving, and the memo also speaks to the prevention of the exacerbation of other adverse public health consequences associated with marijuana use.
Okay.
So it'll be a little bit interesting to see what actually they mean by that. There's the prevention of growing of marijuana on public lands, and the prevention of marijuana possession or use on federal property.
What does that mean? You can't smoke a joint in a federal courthouse, or what does that mean?
Well, yeah, you certainly couldn't smoke a joint in a federal courthouse. You know, you can't possess marijuana in, like, a national park.
Oh, okay.
So that's what that would mean.
So the major implications of this for people in Colorado have been, you're suggesting, not so much for the users who pretty much thought this was coming recreationally anyway, but commercially, what's opened up with this guidance?
You know, it's really just kind of the okay to keep going on the road we're going. So it gives a little bit more certainty to people who are running the businesses or plan to be running the businesses that they're not going to face prosecution, or at least doesn't look like they will.
How's it playing out? Is every town and city open to this? Are some saying yes and some saying no? Do they have that latitude under the Colorado law?
Sure. So our initiative gives cities and counties the ability to ban recreational marijuana stores or businesses in their communities. So quite a few have taken up that offer and have done so. It's looking like on January 1st, there's really only going to be a handful of areas that will actually allow marijuana stores. But Denver looks to be one of those. So, you know, the biggest city in the state does look to be moving forward.
And how's Colorado going to keep marijuana from flowing out? You had a story just a couple of days ago saying, you know, there's more evidence of more Colorado pot flowing to neighboring states. What about that challenge?
Sure. Well, the difficulty is that there's so many ways now under Colorado law to legally grow marijuana. So our law allows for people who are medical marijuana patients to grow up to 6 plants of their own. It now allows anybody over 21, you know, for recreational use to grow up to 6 plants in their house. We have people who are called medical marijuana caregivers. They're kind of small-scale providers of medical marijuana. We have medical marijuana dispensaries. We have soon-to-be recreational marijuana stores. So the difficulty is trying to address all of those areas. You'll be able to hear from Barbara Broll, who's the head of the Department of Revenue, who's sort of in charge of overseeing all of this a little bit later, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The system they're working on, they're planning on rolling out a computerized inventory tracking system later this year that would, in theory, track the plant growth, plant size from seed to sale. And then there would be a point-of-sale system that would track sales going out. So in theory, you would be able to track as closely as you possibly can all marijuana.
Amazing. Sort of put a barcode on the pot and off it goes. John Ingold with the Denver Post, it's great to have you. Please stand by right there. Washington signing off on Colorado and Washington State's recreational pot use and distribution plans with some guidelines. We'll look at that in a moment with the Director of Revenue from Colorado. What do you think about all this? 800-423-8255. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Washington, the Department of Justice, giving the green light to recreational marriage use and sale, voted in by Colorado and Washington State, looking at what that's going to mean on the ground. You can join the conversation this hour. Are you following this? Marijuana party time in Colorado and Washington. The Fed's saying, fine, just don't go crazy and don't ship it out. Would this work in your state? Do you think it ever will? Could this become the national norm? What's your question on how Colorado and Washington are going to do it, manage it? John Ingold joins us from Denver. He's reporter for the Denver Post, hip deep in all of this. And with us right now as well from Denver, very glad to have her, is Barbara Broll. She is executive director of the Colorado Department of Revenue and co-chair of Colorado's Amendment 64 Task Force. That was the amendment that was voted up by Colorado voters last November to work, and the task force to sort of work out all the policy details here. Very glad to have her. Barbara Broll, thank you so much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom.
So you're Director of Revenue. How much revenue do you expect from this front, the pot front? How do you expect it'll compare, let's say, to alcohol revenues?
Well, it's really not a one-for-one correlation because the two of them are taxed a little bit differently, but the revenues that we have been seeing on the medical marijuana side have been about, we're on target for about $8 million in just sales tax revenues this fiscal year. With regard to the what we're calling retail marijuana,
mm-hmm.
We anticipate that would continue. However, excuse me, what you have to realize is that the sales tax for medical marijuana is the 2.9% sales tax.
Yep.
Just the normal sales tax on as you pay on anything that you purchase. And for the retail marijuana, there is there's going to be a ballot initiative on this November's election to look at imposing an excise tax and an additional sales tax as well, which would then increase that amount.
To about what in total?
Well, that's the thing, right? I mean, how do you know how much is going to be sold? We have a real good idea of how much medical marijuana is sold because the population, the patient group that actually purchases that marijuana does so by first receiving a medical marijuana patient card. In tomorrow's world, any person over the age of 21 is potentially a customer. So that's one of the questions that we're addressing right now and dealing with is what is that demand going to be and what is that supply then going to have to be in order to address it. So there really isn't a real clear number yet as to what that number will be.
What's the proposed excise tax and the proposed sales tax? They're a lot higher than your standard tax. What are they individually in?
The proposed excise tax on retail marijuana is 15%, mm-hmm. and the proposed sales tax, additional sales tax, is 10% on the state level. Mm-hmm. Each of the local jurisdictions is also taking a look to see if they want to also impose an additional sales tax. So as a result, it is a little bit higher, but the reason that it needs to be is this is, as John has mentioned, as you've mentioned, this is still illegal at the federal level, and there's a great deal of regulatory oversight and enforcement that needs to be taking place. And with any industry, all of the attendant social costs should ostensibly be paid for by that industry. And so as a result, these excise and sales taxes would be used to not only ensure that appropriate regulation in and oversight is done, but also that things like addiction counseling, mm-hmm. additional social costs that are the attendant costs would be also be addressed.
John Ingold with the Denver Post. I'm looking down here at a menu of a medical marijuana shop that's already up and operating in Denver, and with their lavender haze and blueberry haze and OG Chem Dog and LA Kush and right on down. What's the range of an ounce of pot? What's it selling for now in the medical marijuana dispensaries? What are people imagining ounces, the sort of range in retail pot dispensaries might go for, John, in Colorado?
Oh, gosh. A lot of folks generally buy in eighths of ounces. Mm-hmm. An ounce of marijuana is actually a pretty good amount.
Yeah.
That would last you for quite some time. So, an eighth of an ounce could be something from, say, $20 to maybe $40, $50, if somebody's really charging a sort of a high-end price.
And in terms of the sales tax and excise tax and all the rest, have you seen projections? I mean, Barbara, I'm sure they've got a range of projections somewhere, but what about you, John, for what the state might make off the retail sale of marijuana?
It's really, as she said, it's very difficult to say. There's a big concern of, the tax amount may end up leading to people staying in the black market or may end up leading people staying in the medical market where you don't have to pay the sales tax.
Rather than hit this 15 plus 25 plus the local sales and sort of cigarette style piling on there, yeah?
Sure. I mean, it could add up to, $10, $20 in taxes, I suppose, depending on how much you're buying. It's very difficult to say.
Barbara, we know how tight state finances can be. I'm sure you've run projections on what's possible here. I mean, can you picturing this one day or soon being a revenue stream that is in the same range as you have from alcohol retail sales or not?
Well, one of the things that I think you need to kind of keep in mind is that the excise tax is the first $40 million annually that would be collected on the excise tax is to go to school construction. So first off, that is one of the things that needs to be addressed. And then anything in addition to that then would overflow into the marijuana cash fund.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that the state really is looking at this being a cash kind of a cash cow. What we're really trying to do is just identify what the costs are to address this new emerging industry and then have the fees and have all the structure then support that. But as I said earlier, I mean, we really don't know what's going to happen. We don't know how many people are going to be coming into the state. We don't know what that's going to mean to the state. One of the things that we really need to be really aware of is the way that the amendment was written as it addresses two parts. One of them is what I call the personal growth piece, and John alluded to that at the beginning. And that is basically where any individual over the age of 21 in Colorado can, grow their own. They can grow up to six plants.
A new meaning of personal growth, but okay, cool.
Right, the new meaning of personal growth, exactly. And that is different and separate from what I call the licensed and regulated portion of the marijuana, because that's really just You can do it. John can do it. Anyone on this call who lives in Colorado can do that. And that is not what the Department of Revenue will be regulating. The Marijuana Enforcement Division will really be regulating those businesses that will be the larger scale cultivations, the product manufacturers that create and produce those edibles and concentrate.
You're talking not just smoking, but brownies and all the rest. What about that? Is there any limit on that? Well, can you have giant pot plantations once this is all implemented in Colorado?
Well, right now, what the legislature required us to do, and we were happy to do it, is to identify something similar to what Washington is doing, which is, and it's kind of interesting, is to develop a projection of what the demand is going to be so that we can make sure that we have the supply and only that supply, nothing more, nothing less.
Yeah.
And so we are going to be doing a similar thing to Washington, which is going out and doing sort of a supply-demand study. In the meantime, there will be limits on growth, and it'll be somewhat connected to what medical marijuana limitations are today. Because right now, medical marijuana, there's a built-in limit because you have a finite number of patients. Each patient has, in general, there could be some anomalies, but in general is prescribed up to 6 plants. And so as a result, you know, you take the number of patients, multiply it by the number of, you know, by 6, and that's how many plants you can have. And in tomorrow's world, it's going to be a little bit different. And so as a result, we're going to be commissioning a study on supply and demand. And then we will be, as requested by the legislature and by other members of the task force and the public, identifying what those limitations would be. It could either be on plant count, it could be on numbers. And one of the things that the amendment also does is it provides for very strong local control and allows the local jurisdictions to address time, place, or to impose, I should say, time, place, manner, and number restrictions. So one of the things that we're starting to see is municipalities starting to talk about whether or not they're going to limit the number of marijuana establishments in their locale as well.
You know, John was laying that out. If I may just ask you, John, on the cultivation part here, does anybody estimate it? How many acres in Colorado may be in pot cultivation soon? And do you have Colorado farmers turning from alfalfa to pot?
Well, so all of our marijuana would end up being grown indoors for the most part. I mean, okay. we talk about growing being done in enclosed lock spaces if you're doing personal growing. Most of the commercial growing, in fact, I think probably all of the commercial growing takes place in either greenhouses or most commonly warehouses where people hang lights and do it as sort of an indoor operation. So it's more common to hear people talk in terms of square footage than acreage. I don't think anybody's going to be starting a cannabis farm. Though we do, as part of our initiative, we've also legalized industrial hemp. So there are some farmers who are growing hemp, but that's not something that would feed into this system. That's not something that's going to get you high.
Right. John Ingold, Barbara Broll, please stand by there in Colorado. I want to go to Los Angeles and Mark Kleiman. He's professor of public policy at UCLA School of Public Affairs. He's a consultant to the Washington State Liquor Control Board. In Colorado, it's under the Department of Revenue. In Washington State, under the Liquor Control Board, co-author of Marijuana Legalization, What Everyone Needs to Know. Mark Kleiman, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me back, Tom.
What do you make of the guidelines that came out from the Department of Justice last week and how they align or don't align with expectations and planning in Washington and Colorado?
I think they're more or less as expected, maybe a little bit more forthcoming, a little bit more welcoming than you would have guessed, recognizing the existence of robust state regulation. And the only thing that's really new is saying that for-profit and large-scale operations will not themselves be targets unless they're doing something else. But I wouldn't go nearly so far as, say, the federal government has given a green light. The state processes can go ahead, but as you pointed out, as the other guests have pointed out, this is still illegal under federal law. And this was guidance. As my lawyer friends, this creates no rights and remedies. So anybody who's growing pot or selling it in Colorado and Washington is vulnerable to prosecution. The memo says local federal prosecutors still have their discretion. And, of course, the memo could change next week or with the next administration. So this is still risky business. I know the Attorney General's gotten some criticism for not cracking down. But I sort of wonder whether the critics want him to have his throne moved to the seashore and order the tide to go out. He's basically recognizing the fact that with 4,000 DEA agents, the federal government cannot control cannabis cultivation and distribution without the help of state and local enforcement.
I mean, I know there are still guidelines there, and it's still illegal on the federal books, but, you know, in operational terms, Barbara Broll, there you are. You're kind of in charge of some of this, certainly the revenue side in Denver. Does it look like a green light to you?
Well, I would agree with Mark. It's not really a green light, and I'm also an attorney, but what it does is it sets forth the guidelines that we need to operate under. And it is, and frankly, it was for Colorado, it was we really welcomed this guidance because it told us that we were on the right track. These were all of the things that we were putting in place already with regard to the task force recommendations, with regard to the legislation that occurred, and then with the rulemaking that we've been doing. Mm-hmm. And so we've been really addressing a lot of these issues, not knowing that this was going to be exactly what for the most part, what the Department of Justice was going to come out with. But these are the things that make sense. You want to keep it out of the hands of kids. You want to keep it out of the hands of the rest of the state. You want to make sure that you're in partnership with local law enforcement, because they have a large part to play in this as
sure,
well. This isn't
sure.
just regulated. And so those were the things that we really wanted to make certain of, and putting in place a very comprehensive, robust regulatory scheme. One of the things that John talked about earlier was that seed-to-sale tracking, and that's really important. And you asked, were there going to be little chips or little, you know, kinds of tags? And there are. There's radio frequency ID, and so each plant is going to have, in Colorado, will have an RFID tag. And so you'll be able to track it from either seedling or small clone until it gets packaged and is handed to a consumer as they walk out the door.
So, I mean, I guess, John Ingold, anytime you've got a straight-up contradiction between state law and federal law, then you've got real ambiguity, risk of a different policy down the road, as Mark Kleiman says, definitely. And, of course, it's a reversible. You could have a different administration in Washington. But for the time being, I mean, you know, your lead here is decision with historic implications. Federal government announced will not stand in the way of marijuana legalization in Colorado or Washington State. But it will sound like a green. But it will watch closely. It sounds like a green light to me, John. Not without caveats.
Well, I think the caveats are where the sort of importance of the guidance lies. I mean, again, as Mark said, it doesn't create rights or remedies. It's guidance to prosecutors. It's something that can be changed. It's changed from previous guidance that's been sent out.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it could all be completely undone in the next administration. But it is significant. I mean, here we have open violations of federal law. You drive down the street in Colorado and you see medical marijuana businesses. Soon you'll be able to see recreational marijuana businesses. I mean, they might as well have a sign out front that says federal law is being broken here. And the federal government is here saying that, you know, it's not in the best interests of the Justice Department to make it a priority to crack down on these people who are doing that, which is a fairly significant thing to say.
It's a new world. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Mark, can you imagine once an industry is really up and on the rails that the feds would come in, I don't know, you know, a couple of years from now after another election and say, forget it, dismantle all that, back we go?
I can imagine lots of things. I don't know how likely it is to happen. I think it'll be harder if other states follow suit. California may very well come in 2016. But a number of barriers are still in the way. So we've now got the Treasury, now got the Justice Department saying we're going to hang back and let you guys try this. The Treasury Department still makes it impossible for anybody in the marijuana business to get financial services. These stores
loans
can't take credit
from a
cards.
Bank. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not just loans. They
credit
can't have a bank
loan.
Account.
Mm-hmm.
They can't take credit cards and they can't have bank accounts. I mean,
what about the IRS and revenue from a pot business, a retail pot business?
It's fully taxable, and in fact, it's fairly heavily taxed at the federal level because a special provision of the Internal Revenue Code says you can't deduct your business expenses.
Mark Kleiman, please stand by there at UCLA. It's great to have you with us. Barbara Broll, Director, Executive Director of the Colorado Department of Revenue. John Ingold at the Denver Post. We're talking about the, well, green, amber, Anyway, go ahead, signal from Washington to Colorado and Washington State on marijuana, recreational marijuana use and sale. 800-423-8255 is our number. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Washington, the Department of Justice, giving the green light or something like it to recreational marijuana use voted in by Colorado and Washington State, and what that's going to mean on the ground. Risks, legal risks even, that this could change, this interpretation, this guidance could change down the road. But for right now, referenda passed, and things are up on the rails in both of these states. First in the nation states to do this. 19 or 20 now allow medical marijuana use. This is different. This is recreational. We're looking at how this is unfolding and will unfold. You can join the conversation this hour. Is the DOJ right to give the go-ahead with the guidelines that we've heard about in this hour? Are you okay with the contradiction that it's a Schedule I controlled substance under federal law, but states run right along and have fun here? Is Mile High City taking on a whole new meaning here? How do you picture all this playing out? Barbara Broll is with us. She's a co-chair of Colorado's Amendment 64 Task Force, created to develop policy around what the public voted for here. John Ingold is with us, reporter for the Denver Post, covering all this. And Mark Kleiman is with us from UCLA. He's a consultant to Washington State on their comparable initiative here. We're going to hear in just a second from a now medical marijuana dispenser, soon to be retail recreational marijuana sales operation in Denver. Lots of response online here. Adam says, new source of tax revenue, great. Saves on fighting a stupid war on drugs, spike in sales of munchies at convenience stores. Well, we'll see. Mary Elizabeth says she's happy for the ending of prohibition-era laws and what she calls the crime and punishment economy that it generates. We've got questions here as well, and we'll get to some of those. I want to bring in Andrew Boyens from Denver. He's owner of Natural Remedies. It's a medical marijuana dispensary, making the move to also selling into the coming recreational retail market in Colorado. Andrew Boyens, thanks very much for being with us.
Hello, Tom.
Do you feel like you got a green light last week to go to the retail recreational side?
I mean, I guess it's as close as it could get. You know, we got something similar in 2009, you know, with the Ogden memo that, you know, gave us a similar, you know, guidance, at least like Barbara talked about, that, you know, as long as we're following the state laws and, you know, not doing anything out of the ordinary or, you know, allowing things to get into the wrong hands, you know, we follow the law to the T and we shouldn't have any intervention.
What are you planning in terms of your own cultivation and sale? What kind of expansion do you think it'll mean to get into retail?
Well, with my location being in the middle of downtown and being around, you know, 11 major hotels, we're expecting a pretty big, you know, tourism market to be hitting our store, you know, right away. You know, nobody really knows. It's pretty hard to, you know, put figures on something that's never happened before. So, you know, we're doing our best to, you know, prepare as much as we can, you know, to follow the laws that are being put in place and the regulations by both the state and the city, and, you know, just preparing ourselves to expand into a larger cultivation operation because we expect the demand to be pretty high with the location we have.
A marijuana tourism, meaning once recreational is fully up and operational in Colorado, you expect people will fly in to do it. I mean, there's already talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, companies setting up to do tours right now, but, I mean, we still day-to-day have people try to walk in, you know, upwards of, you know, 15 to 20 people sometimes. I mean, it's definitely already happening. People are reading it in the news, and when they come to Denver, they're trying to figure out where they can go already. So we can only expect when, you know, things like the memo that got released the other day and, you know, it starts getting into the press that it's actually gone through in January and people are actually open for business. You know, it's going to be big news and we expect people to, you know, choose Colorado over other places, maybe if they are interested by this industry.
Andrew, John Ingold's paper, The Denver Post, quotes the tourism director of Colorado, Al White, saying, "I don't think Denver will be the American Amsterdam." What do you think about that? Will it?
That's tough to say. You know, we've done our best to go off tourism figures ourselves. And, you know, we've looked at tourism figures for the 16th Street Mall, which is, you know, a major mall in Denver that's, you know, pretty big tourist destination, and we actually, you know, back right up to it. The tourism figures we found put, you know, that at about, you know, 13 million plus people a year, with it increasing anywhere between, you know, 3% and 4% per year. So, you know, we said, hey, if 20% of those people actually, you know, want to come in and purchase, you're looking at a market of, you know, 3 to 4 million people a year. You know, that could be more, it could be less. You know, we just aren't sure.
Yeah.
It's the best we have, the best figures we have to go off of.
I guess it depends how you define American Amsterdam. Andrew Boyens, right. Owner of Natural Remedies, you're breaking up there a little, but I'm grateful to you for joining us for a minute today. Thanks so much.
All right, thanks.
I want to go to our callers, if I may. Kevin in Cleveland, Ohio. Kevin, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Tom. Yeah, I'm calling about the marijuana subject. It's good that they're finally making it legal in places. It's definitely going to help to try to get rid of the biggest downside to it is the shady underbelly that's involved with the whole situation. You know, the cartels and the crime associated with the other drugs involved.
And you think this will run that out? Let us pick that up, Kevin. Mark Kleiman, what about it? Is it clear? And there's a lot of criminal activity because it's all been illegal around marijuana. Is it clear that that will stay out of the Colorado market, distribution, stores, sales? How do you make a bright line there? And in Washington State as well, Mark?
I don't think it's going to be very hard to keep bad guys out of the legal side of the business. I'm worried somewhat in Colorado. That if anybody can grow six plants, remember, a plant can produce a pound a year.
Yeah.
Fair amount. A pound is about 1,000 joints.
Yeah.
That's a lot for personal use.
More than one would think.
More than.
Yeah. And that's just one plant. You can have six plants.
Right. So six plants is, you know, it was 20 joints a day. So I have a feeling that if stuff leaks from legal production in Colorado out of state, it's going to be from that source, not from the licensed part of the industry. I think the tracking system doesn't have to be very good, given the cost of losing your license, to discourage anybody with a license,
right,
from getting frisky. But Colorado and Washington State are both exporters of illegal marijuana right now. So the question is, will anything change? Insofar as people are buying through the legal system, that's taking money out of the hands of criminals. That's all to the good.
Barbara Broll, what is the law on, I don't know what you'd call it, casual sale? If every citizen can be producing more than they're ever likely to smoke, if they want to give it away, is that legal? If they want to sell it, is that legal?
They can give it away to others that are also over the age of 21, but they cannot sell. And they can't, the law's pretty clear in that they can't receive any remuneration or any consideration. So they can't give it to someone in,
and get a chicken in return.
Right. Concert tickets.
Right.
Or something else. So no, if that does happen, it will be, illegal. And that was what I was talking about earlier when I said there has to be a really good partnership with local law enforcement, because that is going to be a criminal offense.
Boy, can you imagine enforcing that when anybody can have the stuff? I mean, of course, it's already been difficult to enforce for 50 states in a lot of ways at a lot of levels. Susan in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. You're on the air, Susan.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have the viewpoint of the consumer. I'm hearing things like legal, green light, casual sales. So, of course, I'm going to think Amsterdam of the United States is in Colorado when it comes to purchasing marijuana.
Yeah.
My question is, I go to Colorado, I'm on vacation, I purchase it, I consume it there, perfectly legal, I feel comfortable. I come back to Louisiana. Now, let's assume I work for a state agency, a government agency, and they want to spot check me with a drug test. Does that become fair? Is that fair then if I am tested positive for
marijuana? Right, you smoke it legally, you come home, you get tested for drugs, and it hits the fan. Good question. Mark Kleiman, what do you say to that?
Well, smoke it legally under the law of Colorado, but still illegally under the law of the United States. The Controlled Substances Act makes possession of cannabis a crime. The federal government doesn't enforce that very much.
But if there's
there is a deep ambiguity here.
Yeah.
There's a deep ambiguity here. We run two systems. We have a federal legal system. We have state legal systems. Lots of things illegal under federal law, that aren't illegal under Colorado law. Right? Bribing a foreign corporation is a federal crime. I don't think it's a crime in Colorado.
So if somebody smokes it legally in Colorado, but then has a drug test back in their home state, and it's found that there's traces of marijuana use there, and they get in trouble for it, having smoked it legally in Colorado is no gives them no exemption.
Well, having smoked it legally under Colorado law, even though it was illegal under federal law.
Yeah. Tom, this
yes,
is Barbara.
Barbara.
And actually, what the task force did and what our legislation has done in Colorado is it's leaving it up to the employer to determine what their drug policy is. Because even though it is legal in the state of Colorado, if you are working for a business that says they have a zero drug tolerance policy, mm-hmm. then if you want to keep your job, you're going to have to maintain that zero drug tolerance. And so as a result, you know, it doesn't really, if you're any employer can impose whatever legal restrictions they want, as long as they're legal and as long as they're under the Fair Labor Standards Act.
Even in Colorado.
In Colorado as well. So even though it is, and we talked extensively during the task force about having a quote-unquote penalty associated with something that was legal to do in your own personal time. And the idea is that that's really, you know, something that each employer is going to have to address. And right now they are looking at how they will be modifying their policies around drug use. I mean, they do the same thing with prescription drug use as well, and not being impaired. I mean, there are some businesses that you just cannot be impaired.
Yeah, so you get this welter of federal, state, private employer rules. Susan, tread carefully there. Michael in Nashville, Tennessee. Michael, you're on the air.
Yes, I just want to kind of follow up with that with another question. I was just wondering how they're going to govern similar to the driving under the influence laws with alcohol. If you have people that are stoned on marijuana and create an accident, are there laws that are going to protect drivers for that? Or as an employer, if I have someone, if I have a zero drug policy? And then the other thing is I'm sort of a quandary to see that we're a nation that has worked so hard to reduce the amount of smoking that goes on, and here we're promoting this thing, the smoking of marijuana. So I'll hang up and just listen.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Michael. And yes, I can say just formally, there is a limit. THC, the sort of active chemical in the blood, 5 nanograms for Colorado motorists on the road. We'll look at that. We'll look at the whole picture of the federal policy on the state green light that Colorado and Washington State have given to recreational marijuana use. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. John Ingold, what about that blood limit on use or stonedness? If I don't know what the right word is in Colorado these days.
Right. Well, so our law is a little bit different than Washington's law. I think Washington has a hard limit of THC that drivers can have in their blood as part of their legalization initiative. So it would be 5 nanograms per milliliter of whole blood. In Colorado, we have the same standard that's written into our laws, but it's not a firm standard. It's not something that says if you test positive for this, you are automatically considered impaired under the law. It's instead, it's what's called a permissive inference for a jury. It's sort of a nudge to the jury that, hey, if you're having trouble figuring out what's stoned and what's not stoned, 5 nanograms is probably stoned.
And what about, lots of people are asking online here about driving, and is there equivalent of drunk driving under recreational marijuana use? And what about liability? If I'm stoned and I hit somebody, I don't know, we've got a listener here asking if the feds are responsible for allowing the states to make it legal.
Sure. I think the important thing to remember about our law and about the law in Washington as well is that it's the laws make it so that it's not a crime to use marijuana, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't have consequences for using marijuana. So when it comes to employment, you know, nothing really changes if your employer doesn't want you smoking pot off job or on job. When it comes to driving, it's always been, maybe not always, but for a long time it's been illegal in Colorado to drive impaired under drugs. It's called DUID. The question is sort of how you define it when it comes to marijuana, and the legalization law has sort of prompted a new effort to go back and better define that, because there's a concern we're going to be seeing more cases.
Mark Kleiman, export to other states is barred by these federal guidelines. What about a visitor to Colorado or Washington State who buys some quite legally in those states and then, you know, flies home with a few joints in their pocket? What's the situation then?
Very, very bad idea. You're going through a TSA checkpoint.
Yes. So there's no exemption. There's no, you bought it in Colorado, fine, on you go.
No, you know, and sending it in the mail is against the law. I think some people are going to find out the hard way. On the drunk driving stuff, it's complicated, both because of the biology and the chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
Blood alcohol is measurable by a breath test. That's pretty easy.
Yeah, roadside.
Blood THC is measurable only by a blood test. Police officers are not medical personnel. They
you mean
do not
drawing blood.
You actually have to draw blood, mm-hmm. which means you actually have to be in a medical facility.
Mm-hmm.
There's not going to be a lot of that. The other problem is that you'll have THC in your blood long after you're no longer stoned.
Yeah.
Because THC is fat soluble and it comes back out.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to need a lot more technology development to actually be able to tell whether somebody's impaired or not.
What do you think? We just got a minute here, but I asked Barbara earlier if she, you know, what Colorado, Washington State get a lot of revenues from liquor sales. Do you expect that one day, maybe soon, retail marijuana recreational sales will, rival those, Mark, or be some significant percentage of them comparable?
I'm sorry to say I don't have the alcohol numbers in my head. For cannabis, I think Washington, which I've looked at,
mm-hmm.
Could be deriving a couple of $100 million a year once the market's up and running. And Colorado's probably about half that. But I think the point that was made earlier by Barbara is the key point. This is not supposed to be a cash cow. You don't want to run these systems to maximize revenue. You want to run these systems to minimize drug abuse, and it's a very different objective.
We'll see how that goes. I mean, alcohol certainly rolls off a lot of cash for a lot of governments now, and after it's been around
and
for a while.
And alcohol's a very, very bad example, an example we really shouldn't follow.
Point taken, yet it's the real world for a long time. And here we go, down maybe a parallel road. Very grateful to all three of you. I do as well. Grateful to all of you. Mark Kleiman at UCLA, thank you for joining us today, Mark.
My pleasure.
Barbara Broll, Executive Director of the Colorado Department of Revenue. Barbara, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And John Ingold of the Denver Poster. Great, John. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.